Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com and, of course, on the air right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And the past few weeks, if you've been listening, you know that I've been a little down on the government. I've been looking at its shortcomings, so to speak, saying, well, healthcare.gov is never going to work. Things like, well, you get the idea. Oh, we're cutting the budget. We're going to get rid of, we don't need all those F-35s anymore. We're not going to have it as technologically as advanced as we would like. We're just trying to save some money. That's all. No big deal. No bubbles, no troubles, right? So, this week, unfortunately, is not going to be much different. We are post-release of a cyber framework. This is a voluntary framework that NIST has released saying, you know, to protect the infrastructure, we, well, suggest that you follow these steps, follow these rules to make sure that everything will remain awesome in your world. I saw a Lego movie, so I'm going to use everything is awesome a lot. I apologize ahead, in advance, if you will. But I have a couple of people here who will likely sway my decision by the end of this program because they were deeply involved in consulting with NIST and other organizations and putting this framework together. And I have a feeling they may make me say, Alan, everything really is awesome. But we'll see. Their names, Kirsten Tott, who is the president of Liberty Group Ventures, and her partner, Peter Cressy. Roger Cressy. Did I call you Peter?
That is my nom de guerre.
That's it.
Only on the radio.
His name is, he goes by Peter, only on the radio. Roger Cressy, I apologize. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Great Thanks, to Alan. Be here.
So tell me, am I right? Am I wrong? Look at healthcare.gov. I mean, the government contracted a bunch of people to put a site together, and it had lots of shortcomings. Why would I now listen to the government? By the way, this is coming directly from the president. This
yes.
framework is coming directly from the president by way of an executive order because Congress couldn't get along well enough to do anything about it. So now we're being, I don't want to say forced into this framework because we're really not because it's voluntary. See the air quotes? Mm-hmm. It's voluntary.
Well done.
Straighten me out here. What's going on? Kirsten?
This is your opportunity to feel good about the government.
All right. Straighten me out. Come on.
I think the last time we talked about healthcare.gov, while you have disasters in any organization, you know, whether it's the government or something else, you can't hold the rest of the government accountable to what's happened in other places.
Really? I can't hold my daughter responsible for something my son did?
You could try. and your son may have a different view on that.
I can't punish them both.
But this organization, I mean, so Roger and I have talked a lot about this from the perspective of having worked in government and now what's happening being outside of government.
Yeah, let's take a step back real quick because I want to set the stage here. Kirsten, you've been on the program a lot, but give people an idea. I don't want them to think that you're just a couple of people that walked in off the street and go, I got an opinion. Here, let's talk to him.
Well, the door was open.
There you go. Security was very tight.
So we're mitigating risk in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. So Kirsten, just take a moment, set the stage. Give us an idea of what your background is and why you're able to speak to the level that you're speaking about this.
Sure. I mean, so Roger and I are both recovering bureaucrats. I mean, I spent time in the White House doing drug policy, domestic policy, and on the Hill during 9/11 and was engaged in Homeland Security and helped draft the legislation to create the Department of Homeland Security. And the areas that I was responsible for were infrastructure protection, emergency preparedness, and science and technology. And I spent time in the state government out in California and then working with businesses and the government on policy, always with an eye towards cyber and where cyber has come from. So what we talk about is how we've been engaged in cyber before it became mainstream. And so the perspective that we look at this is having been involved in cyber and being part of national-level efforts for cybersecurity, this has been the most transparent and effective process for putting a group of essentially aggregating cyber ideas together for the purposes of infrastructure and infrastructure protection. And looking at what the framework, we can talk about the framework a little bit more, but I think when you look at what needed to be done and what tools were available, you talk about what Congress wasn't able to do and what was available to the president, and giving it to NIST to lead has turned out to be tremendously effective.
Roger.
So the framework really is an admission of Congress couldn't pass any legislation. The administration said we have to do something on critical infrastructure protection. This is one of these great Washington issues. Everyone's in agreement that our critical infrastructure is vulnerable to a wide variety of threats, more so from cyber than in the past, yet nobody can seem to get on the same sheet of music about what should be done about it. There are the people out there, the regulatory, you can't regulate anymore, it's going to stifle innovation and cost too much. And then there's everyone else on the other end of the spectrum that says, we're so vulnerable to a wide variety of threats, we need to do more, the government needs to do more now. So if the administration looked at that debate and said, all right, we're not going to get anywhere by going the same approach. So let's take what's out there right now, the best practices, the standards that are being used in industry right now, and pull together those things in a framework that anybody can use. So, Alan, if you are a public utility in Des Moines, Iowa, and your security, you're not so sure about what you should do on your cybersecurity, you can look at this framework, and it can lay out a roadmap for how you can do a better job to mitigate and manage your cyber risk and therefore improve your security. It is voluntary. And it's also very flexible, so it's not one size fits all. But it is a better departure point on dealing with cybersecurity than we have seen in years because, as you know, if you pay any attention to the cybersecurity debate in this town, it is Groundhog Day. It's the same issues, the same people, the same critics saying the same things over and over again. And Kirsten and I spent all this time out around the country in these workshops sponsored by NIST. And when we talk to the critical infrastructure owners and operators, they're saying, enough. Give us something we can use, and that's what we think this framework can do.
Were they brought into any of those discussions to say these are our pain points, this is what we need to worry about, were these critical infrastructures consulted at all? That was the whole point.
So okay. NIST took a tremendous at the outset. NIST said the only way we're going to get something that people believe in is if they're a part of it, and if infrastructure and the private companies are feeding into this. So what you see, what the framework that was released yesterday. This document is a reflection of what the private sector said, hey, this is working for us, this isn't working for us, these are the standards that we most often use, these are our best practices, and this is what we need. The other key point to this is those workshops not only solicited input from the big companies that everybody hears from, but as Roger said, they talk to the small utilities in Hawaii, from Middle America, from all of these other areas that, while on target from a quantitative number, may not seem big across the country. When you're talking about the only water provider in Kentucky or in Kansas, and even though it only has 1,500 customers, it's pretty critical if that company goes down. And so this framework looks across the entire supply chain of infrastructure delivery. And it is the result of several workshops that NIST sponsored for the purposes of soliciting private sector input.
So we're still looking at this is mainly for cyber. Obviously, clearly, this is for the potential of a cyber attack. Somebody taking down the power grid. Somebody polluting the water supply by changing the makeup of a chemical that could be potentially pumped in through a computer somehow. Does this solve the problem of and we're only looking at, right now, we're only looking at the critical infrastructure. How far could this go? We're hearing about Target, hearing about Neiman Marcus, you're hearing about other companies that are now, every day, you're hearing about these voids. I've had two different credit cards now just wiped out. I've had to turn them both in, and I got new ones because they were hacked. As a part of, well, I shop at Neiman Marcus quite a bit. As you can clearly see.
You look sharp.
Well, thank you.
You look sharp.
I was hoping I wore this special just for you guys. I understand that for critical infrastructure, it's voluntary. Are others allowed to just – it's out there. Are others allowed to just hop on?
So think of the retail sector, and you can make a strong argument it's part of critical infrastructure.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
So because what happens in the retail industry affects consumers more on a daily basis than just about anything else. And so the data breaches that we've seen reported and the other ones that haven't been reported, the framework can be applied to them. I mean, think what has been reported already about Target. So the Target breach happened because an adversary was able to get in through the HVAC system that one of their supply chain, one of their partners, was using. If that reporting is accurate, then that demonstrates that, yeah, you're worried about your data, you're worried about your personal identifiable information, your PII, yet the HVAC system within the overall Target ecosystem was being used.
Right.
So you've got to take a broader, holistic, one of those cliche words, but you've got to take a more holistic view at cybersecurity. So the framework can definitely apply to that because your data, you want your data to be secure. You don't want it to be corrupted. You don't want it to be manipulated. So identity and access management, a key element of all this. So the debate we're having right now on the retail about getting away from those magnetic strips and getting to pin and chip technology.
This is technology technology that's in use overseas already. Why are we so far behind?
It costs too much. It's legacy systems, people don't want to do it.
Legacy systems.
And now that's going to change.
Okay. When you've got the challenges, you've got all of these different stakeholders that are part of the chip-enabled technology, the smart chip technology, that can't agree on where the cost should be borne. And so that's been the primary issue for the United States. Canada's doing it, Europe's doing it. But what this breach has done is Target is now inspired. They've said that they're going to put forth $100 million to get this process going 6 months before they thought they were ready to release it. And they're willing to take on more of the cost that other entities, merchants, banks, vendors were not able to do or didn't choose to do. And, you know, what Target will say and what's been out there is that there's still some information about whether or not the validation of it. But Target is saying we're going to be a thought leader in this. We're going to step out in front of this. The other comment I wanted to make to you about the framework is you talk about this is for all of these threats that are coming. If you look at physical protection and physical infrastructure protection, you're going to do this to protect against that which is deliberate, but also that which is accidental. Mm-hmm. So the issue with cybersecurity is it's not necessarily the phishing attempt or the malware and all. Those are clearly a part of this, but there are mistakes that people make. And there are things that can just happen to your cyber infrastructure because technology goes awry, because, you know, different issues with your software that are not intentional and they're not malicious. So the idea being now that our infrastructure is so dependent on our cyber infrastructure, so how we look at, you know, our primary delivery of services, that's dependent on this infrastructure that has vulnerabilities. And so this framework is intended to make that infrastructure more resilient.
And it's an important point that it is the supply chain within an organization that the framework can really help better secure. So, you know, Bloomberg, let's say Bloomberg has a series of
I'm not allowed
partners.
To talk about Bloomberg Security. I'm sorry.
Hey, you guys are fantastic. Despite the fact the door was open and we just walked in, you have a series of
He's
partners.
Kidding, by the way.
We are kidding. We kid about it. We're serious about security, but we kid. But you think about it. Any large organization has a series of partners and subsidiaries. You need to be sure that their approach to security is consistent and focuses the same way that yours is. So the framework provides a guide. Now, some people have said, well, you know, geez, there's nothing in here that's new. Well, yeah, duh, because for the past 10 plus years, we're still having the same arguments in this town and elsewhere about how to get going. So some people say, well, if you just whitelist, everything will be fine. Or if you just restrict sysadmin privileges, or you do a better job of patch management. Well, yeah, of course, we've been doing that for 10 plus years.
Right.
We need a structure and a construct that allows everybody, regardless of the size of the entity, to take a better approach to cybersecurity. And the framework has that capability.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guests are Kirsten Todd and Roger Cressy.
Peter, thank you.
They're from Liberty Group Ventures, an organization that was entrenched in the framework that has just been released by NIST, and were integral in a lot of the workshops around the country as the discussions were being had with these critical infrastructures about how to best protect themselves, best practices, so to speak. And Kirsten, you touched on something a second ago that kind of sparked my interest, and you talked about how we're constantly evolving, to kind of summarize what you said. And it leads me to believe that we are our own worst enemies as we continue to evolve, thinking about how you can start your car now with your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You can lock your doors. It's commercials now. Guys, did you lock the house up? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure you did. Uses his phone to lock everything. How much of that is now lending itself to an open door for someone, anyone, mm-hmm. to come in and take advantage?
Well, it's a huge vulnerability, and there's now, as with everything, there's a phrase that's being used called the Internet of Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this idea that when you do that, you have a single point of failure. And we have this idea that we're always trying to innovate, and that is a trajectory that any country wants to be on, that as a nation, as a world, we want to be on. But what happens when you innovate so quickly is the technology to protect that innovation and to protect the infrastructure that we've come to depend on is always lagging behind, because innovation happens first, and then the protection around that innovation comes second. So it's a real challenge that we have, and particularly when we have become so dependent on technology. And, you know, you get a note from your bank that says, hey, now you can deposit your checks on your phone, and now you can do everything from your phone.
Yeah.
And that's great, because that means, hey, I don't have to drive up to the teller window, I don't have to go to the ATM. But implicit in that is a certain vulnerability. And it's not to say that you shouldn't do those things, because there's, you know, technology-enabled innovation. But it's certainly something that makes us wary of where the technology is going. And when you look at something like the framework, or you look at actions that are taken by Target, these are actions to create redundancy and resiliency in a structure that's moving at a light speed. And how do you do that in an effective way to preserve innovation, but to also preserve security and safety?
Roger, have you changed your behavior at all, knowing what you know about the framework itself and how vulnerable we are as a country with regard to a cyber attack, so to speak? Have you edited how often you may hit the ATM, or do you use credit cards? Do you use? I'm trying to develop a profile for you.
under Peter Cressy.
You know? Are you? No, seriously. Mike. I mean, have you? I'm curious about this. I spoke to Richard Betlich from Mandiant not too long ago, and I asked him, you know. I see you have a mobile phone. I won't go into the device that he was using, but I see you have a mobile phone. I know that you get threats constantly from China about how outspoken you've been about a lot of the things that are going on over there and the attacks that they've been able to isolate coming directly from that country, from various sects. How do you protect yourself? What do you use? And he said, well, I will never use anything other than this particular device. It was an iPhone.
Right.
I'll never use anything other than an iPhone. I feel safest with that.
Yeah.
How far have you taken your own personal life, if you want to go into that at all?
So let's look at it this way. Around here in D.C., we drive on the Capitol Beltway.
Right.
You take your life into your hands every time you get on that highway.
Good point.
Right? But yet you decide to do it for a variety of reasons. And now you watch your speed, you put your seatbelt on, hopefully you use a blinker when you change lanes. You're managing risk. You're managing risk in getting point A to point B.
Right.
Now you could do a bunch of other things and just, woohoo, who cares about your risk? I'll die trying, but having fun get there. The same thing is true in cyberspace and what you do with personal transactions. You need to take steps to mitigate the risk you expose yourself to when you're using credit cards, when your personal identifiable information is out there. Now, Kirsten talked about the Internet of Everything. The connectivity of our society is unprecedented right now, and it's going to continue, leaps and bounds. Security will never be ahead of that. It will always play catch up. So some people say, you know, well, the framework talks about what's already here. Well, actually, that's not true. The framework is a process that allows you to think about what comes next, because what was released by the White House on Wednesday was not the end of the story. This is going to be an iterative process. What's unique here is the government is going to take what industry does in terms of application of the framework, lessons learned, and incorporate it back into it, and then create new and improved versions so that hopefully the framework keeps up with how critical infrastructure is evolving. So, as Kirsten said, this is about managing risk. We manage risk on a daily basis in our personal lives, and we should expect critical infrastructure owners and operators to do the same thing, and we should expect the government to play a role in doing that.
Again, we are our own worst enemies when it comes to that. Kirsten.
When you look at something like the framework and you take, as Roger said, this is the first iteration. I mean, there is an opportunity here for entities to try it, to implement it, to see what works, and then to give feedback. And that is really, that's the key to where we are right now when you look at the structures that are getting put in place. And so, you know, as this process has gone on and as it will continue, this is a dynamic, living document. And it is incumbent upon the infrastructure providers who have a supply chain of small businesses, of large businesses, to say what's working for us, what's not working, and then to give that feedback to NIST. And I think one of the things that NIST has demonstrated this year is their willingness and the rigor with which they take that feedback and they're incorporating it. And they've spent a lot of time trying to do that.
Obviously the conversations were productive. The framework is out there. Who were there any naysayers like me at the beginning of this interview?
Oh yeah.
Were there any that sat back?
Of course. And there still are, Alan. And I think that's you know.
So even all through all the discussions, were you not able to turn them around? They're still. This is never going to work.
Well, I would say people who participated in the process turned around, which is a fascinating reflection on human behavior. You know, people there, the first workshop we had, we had one here in D.C. that was just a day, and then we had one in Pittsburgh. And the first one in Pittsburgh, there were a lot of naysayers who were still doubting the actual executive order. Why did we even have an executive order? It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any teeth behind it. Anybody who participated in one or more of the workshops, and there may be people out there who are saying, well, actually, I still don't believe in it, but I went to all five. But I could say pretty honestly, that people who started to say, hey, this doesn't work, and saw the process, saw the rigor that went into it, how their input and their questions were coming back with answers and with other questions to them, okay, how would you do it? Most of those people turned around. There were people who stayed outside of the process, that stayed on the periphery just to say no. And there were also some people who participated, but participated as a naysayer. And, you know, we're there to constantly challenge. And you always want challenge in a process as long as it's constructive. I mean, understand what's been said, understand what's changed, and don't continue to regurgitate the same arguments that we've already talked about, because nothing is going to be perfect. But is this better than what was before?
And naysayers are actually a good and healthy thing, as long as they're being honest with themselves about the arguments they're making and not making the same argument that we heard 5, 6, 7 years ago. If the constructive feedback from the critical infrastructure owners and operators is the most important thing in this process, then we're going to get that.
Right.
If the industry associations and some of the Washington crowd say, hey, well, the framework didn't give me what I wanted.
They'll sound just like that.
They do, actually. Then they'll continue to make those arguments, but it'll fall on deaf ears.
Right.
Because the people outside the Beltway who are the target audience for this are saying, hey, you know what? The government said it was going to be open and transparent. It is. They took my comments, maybe not all of them, but at least they took some of them, and I'm going to give this an honest shot to see if I can implement it in a way that improves my security. And you know what? If it doesn't, then there are other options out there. By the way, one of those options is more regulation. Nobody wants that. So this is a great, perhaps last best opportunity to do this without additional regulation.
Real quick, in the time we have left, voluntary for now, will it become mandatory? Kirsten.
Voluntary for now.
All right. Roger.
It doesn't have to become mandatory.
Okay.
And I think it's safe to say there is no plan nor expectation. So conspiracy theorists, listen. There is no plan or expectation to make it mandatory. But first, you've got to see how it is used by industry for a little while, and then we assess where we're at.
I think the objective here is it started off as mandatory to get people to engage in it, and that's what you want. And let's see
voluntary.
Where it goes.
Started off as voluntary.
But it's interesting, you know, where the Washington minds will go with this to say, hey, you know, this must be mandatory. Who knows? But I think let's focus on what it is and let's make the best of it and then see what comes next.
The framework is out there, and you be the judge. Will things get better? Will my power stay on? Will my water still taste good? Or is it going to taste tinny now? Cyber can do that. Kirsten Todd, Roger Cressy, Liberty Group Ventures is the name of the organization. Phone number where you can be reached if people have some risk management issue they need taken care of.
703-647-4110.
Woohoo! Guys, thank you very much for being
thank
here.
Thank you, Alan, always.
Well, the president clearly making a statement and living through on his promise, signing the executive order last year when Congress couldn't make a decision, and now the framework is out. Special thanks to Kirsten Todd and Roger Cressy from Liberty Group Ventures. You can reach them at 703-647-4110. If you have a risk management need, they are more than happy to assist in mitigation. And with that, we put the wraps on this week's edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me on Twitter at Alan L. Scott. And follow Federal News Radio at Fed News Radio. I'll catch you again next Thursday at 11 with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.